Hello and welcome to episode 36 of 20-somethings with First World Problems, the show where a bunch of grown adults talk about a bunch of other grown adults that open tightly colored umbrellas in their opening sequence, and a cavalcade of guest stars sometimes joins them when they're in a ratings-sensitive time slot. I am your host, Luke, and as always, I am joined with Zach.
Yeah, there's like a lot of fucking guest stars in this episode. I was really surprised.
Yeah. We have got Simon with us here today.
I'm a Phoebe.
Okay. Great. And we have got Joel.
Could I be any more excited to see Marcel again?
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
I'm so jazzed.
Yep, the monkey was like the best part of season one, and yeah. I still think the show went downhill when they got rid of him.
He should have his own show, really.
You would have thought they would have kept it, like, his return till, like, they really needed it in, like, you know, 4 or 5. Because they knew they would be on for a while.
I was saying this in the episode we did on the Marcel episode, was that I was shocked that that happens that early, because that is such an iconic part of this show.
Yeah.
And I could have swore they had him, like, I thought he was, like, an installed, like, part of this show for a long time. And then I remember that I was actually thinking of when Joey and Chandler get a duck.
Yeah, the duck and the chick are kind of like their like mid-season replacement for Marcel.
It's really easy to get ducks and monkeys confused, so I understand.
Well, I mean, in the sense that they're weird animals to have in an apartment, yeah.
I mean, that's true.
Mike, unfortunately, can't join us for this episode. I think we mentioned last time that he is sort of having some change-ups in his schedule, so he'll be back next week. But, you know, for now, we get 1 week free of his stupid coffee shop grid theory.
Jesus.
Yeah, and
Matt's just
like, not here. I understand that the people on the show don't behave like real people, but that's because it's a sitcom. You don't gotta come up with this complicated, like, well, it's just stupid.
I mean, it is weird that they always have this couch and no one else ever uses it, and they get to sit on it and put their feet on it, but, yeah, whatever.
Mm. I think it's because they're assholes, though.
Yeah.
By him not being here, though, one of us is going to inadvertently bring it up at some point. It's
you don't think it's inevitable.
Yeah.
I mean, like you don't need an in-universe explanation for it. Like that's just I don't understand why he's so obsessed with it. And also,
I'm pretty sure
it's just because somebody, you know, they have an in with the owner, and they get their special seat.
So.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, they're attractive people.
If you really want an explanation, I'm sure it's that, like, Rachel bitches out anyone else who tries to sit there, and, like, all the other regular customers are terrified of using that couch.
Oh, man. See, this is a rich... This is the kind of speculative fiction I can get behind with the show Friends, but his, like, science fiction crap, it just doesn't have a place in this kind of show.
You know we're going to get an angry email from Mike after this. He listens to this episode.
Oh, totally.
He's going to have this whole diatribe about how the events of this episode are explained by his theory and blah, blah, blah. You know?
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So we have our... Before we get into the episode, we, of course, have our recurring Friends Facts segment where we talk about some just sort of behind-the-scenes stuff with this. This is actually a really
Sensible name.
Just a really good name
for a segment.
Yep.
Yeah, you compliment me on that every episode.
I know.
You know, thank you. Please continue to. This is actually kind of a big landmark for our podcast because this is one of the most, I think it is the most viewed episode of this show ever.
Well,
because
they just
as
got
the title,
more views out of it, so there you go.
Yes, they did.
After all these years.
I meant more in terms of the ratings at the first showing of it, but you're right.
Yeah. someone at NBC or whatever, like, just, like, barged into, like, some executive's office with a sheet of paper and said, "Sir, more people just watched the Super Bowl episode of Friends." And the guy's like, "My God."
Wait, yeah. Wait, what, Simon? What if you or us are directly responsible for a Friends revival?
Oh, that would make
my day. I think that'd be the number one hope of this podcast.
Yeah, there's nothing I would like more but to see like a crowd started revival, the Friends, and to
they just announced the casting for the new Friends movie reboot.
But oh, really?
We'll
talk about that next time.
Yeah, they just don't look anything like what I picture the Friends cast as. That's all.
Do you picture the Friends cast as the cast of Friends?
Yeah, you know.
I think that's how most people picture them.
Yeah, it's just too jarring. I can't deal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, we'll see. But this episode, as its title might suggest, originally aired after Super Bowl 30, and considering that we just had Super Bowl 50 a few months ago, that really puts it into perspective.
Wow, 20 years, imagine.
Yeah,
it could be 20 years. It was like the midnight. Oh, crap.
It was 1996, right. And it's 2016 now, man. Yeah.
Yep. That can't be
it
right.
It was 20 years ago. Time marches on inexorably.
We're never going to catch up with the Friends episode count at this rate. It's...
So, like we mentioned, this episode has a big old bunch of guest stars in it. It's got Brooke Shields. It's got where's the list of them? I don't want to forget anybody here.
Fred Willard.
Yeah, it's got Dan Castellaneta. Yep. Castellaneta.
Castellaneta. Yeah.
Homer Simpson
and Chris Isaac, the rock musician. Who, you know what, I'm going to be honest, I've never heard of Chris Isaac before this episode.
The name sounds familiar, but when you said it, I was like, I don't know who that is.
I was saying that to be like, okay, he must be part of a band that I know, but now I'm looking at his Wikipedia page and I still don't know who he is.
Got lost in the 90s.
He's known for his hit Wicked Game. I've never heard of that song.
I'm sure he was big then. I don't remember him, though.
Yeah,
but we're 20 somethings now, and so when he was big, like we were just tiny children.
Yeah.
Was it like that he was the Robin Thicke of his generation?
He could have been for like all we know.
Robin Thicke guest starring on a sitcom today. That's what this was like.
Would he be wearing?
We'd have to be 20 years in the future so we know if Robin Thicke's influence. Was like,
I guess that's true.
Went into history as like an immortal artist, or if everyone's forgotten about him by then.
I mean, I'm pretty sure people are on the cusp of forgetting about him now.
So. Yeah, yes, right. Yeah. If you hadn't reminded me, now we're good for another 6 months of knowing.
I just really liked that Beetlejuice outfit. That's all.
Yeah,
he came out to the MTV Awards in.
Yeah, but let's see.
Okay, we can't say his name anymore, because if we do, I think that'll summon him.
Yes. Oh, just like Parasite from Superman. There you go! Oh, I mentioned it! Yes!
That's not even a property of the Parasite!
It's not?
No! You just steal Superman's powers. You can't just make shit up to squeeze those
but
oh,
Superman,
God, I'm sorry. I just really like mentioning
Superman
Parasite.
Superman has every power you could possibly want. You just add Super in front of it, and he's got it. So.
Yeah. Right, well, that's how he can stand up to the Parasite's power-sapping abilities.
Yeah. Like, Superman, I'm sure, at some point in the Silver Age, had Super Beetlejuice powers.
I don't think Beetlejuice was invented yet.
Superman had every power in this.
They wouldn't have called it that, but it would have been the same thing. Like, Silver Age Superman had every single, like, possible property that you could add super in front of at some point.
Well, are you saying, I mean, he had super hearing, so if you called his name 3 times, he would probably show up.
Guys, we cannot spend this much time on Superman on every episode. This isn't a Seinfeld podcast.
Okay, sorry.
For shit's sake, I try and tell you that every time.
You know, we should really spin off a Seinfeld podcast.
You can get the hell out if you're going to start that kind of heresy.
So should we start the episode?
Did you have other stuff? I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Yeah, we're still in the Friends facts.
I'm sorry.
That's
okay.
Yeah,
we kind of, to be fair, we did kind of steamroll right over his facts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Too much commentary. Please, enlighten us.
So this was, I think it was originally just aired as a double length episode, and it was cut up into
that would make sense.
2 episodes for, later.
So they aired the whole hour?
Yeah.
Okay.
Which is sort of weird because, I don't know about you guys, this kind of felt like a fully encapsulated episode.
Yeah.
Well, that actually makes a little more sense why it would be called a two-parter than if it was specifically aired as part of a set, like,
because yeah, otherwise,
it's, right, but I've seen other, like, I've seen episodes of The Office that were in a similar situation as this. That, yeah, like, the show doesn't wrap up at the half hour mark. You have to watch the whole hour. This yeah. felt more like this.
This is two episodes that just happened to be on the same night.
Maybe they yeah. were ready for. I mean, getting ready for. They already knew how big they were. Maybe they were like, in syndication, they'll have to they'll right, air them in out of order and stuff.
Yeah, well, and I mean, that's sort of the
The title is the one after the Super Bowl, so if part two aired right. the week after that, then it would no longer be after the Super Bowl, right? So.
Oh, yeah, no, of course. It just seems like you would write an episode that takes up an hour of time.
Well,
I don't know.
Do you think maybe that was actually kind of the joke? Because, I mean, they specifically named it contextually based on when this initially aired.
Yeah, I have to say, I actually really don't like that, because normally they name the episode after what happens in the episode.
Yeah, this is only like, there's a thing at the beginning of this episode that, like, could be interpreted as relating to the Super Bowl, but that's it.
What, in that it's a commercial?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
That's and a, everyone's, that's a, like, sitting around
that's a,
watching
that's
that
a Mike-level stretch right there.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Stop.
I really, I
you
really
know,
think it's
Mike,
just...
Mike is a broken clock. He's right twice a day, so there you go.
Broken clock king, frankly.
I just really think yep. that it's weird that they name it that. And you know, because when you're rewatching it like we are, mm-hmm. like, I didn't know that until I... Wikipedia'd why it was called that. So, yeah, it's just frustrating to me.
Right. Yeah, but I'm just looking at, like, the Wikipedia page now. The decision to air the episode directly after Super Bowl 30 was made by NBC in hopes of making that Sunday the highest-grossing ad revenue day in television history.
Ugh,
the guest
Jesus.
Stars were tasked to draw more viewers and further increase the advertising revenue. Man, they were just blatantly mercenary about this.
Yeah,
for real. Jesus.
It's like they're making this show only to appeal to merchandising and, you know, advertising yeah. revenues.
Yeah. In past years, networks had exploited the post-Super Bowl time slot to launch new series. NBC made an exception with Friends because they believed it would attract more advertising revenue than a new show. Kurt King, press manager for Friends, commented, "Try to think of the new shows that were premiered after recent Super Bowls and name one that's still around."
American Dad.
What we decided to do this
after,
year,
yes.
Yeah. What we decided to do this year was not to unveil a new show, but give people an extra special version of a show they already like a lot. So that was a huge success for them, and that's kind of what NBC does now when they host the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, this is not... I don't know about you guys. I didn't think this was a great episode, so...
Yeah, I
it's
mean...
not...
Yeah.
I mean, I was super excited to see the monkey again, but I mean, they should have devoted the entire episode
to that. The monkey's like
that.
The C-plot in this.
Some of them.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, we didn't have a huge Friends Facts section this time, just so why don't we get right into the episode? We can skip our first
yep.
bit here. Because I think we're all just eager to dive right into this this episode of Friends. So it opens up in sort of a weird situation.
Yeah.
It almost looks shot more like a single cam sitcom.
You would think that this is a new show, right? If you just finished watching the Super Bowl and assuming you dodged all the ads for this. Because the opening doesn't look anything like Friends.
And it actually does look...
You have like
this
shot of a guy working at a desk and...
Yeah, it actually kind of looks, especially with the musical sing, it almost kind of does feel like the like cold open to a brand new show.
I
think once the monkey shows up, the artifice is clear.
Right, no, I just mean like that very first shot. Like it.
Right.
Yeah, it's I clicked on the wrong thing on Netflix.
Yeah, me too for
Did
a second.
You? Yeah, because it looks nothing like Friends.
It's like the beginning of season 2 of Lost where it takes place inside the hatch and you get this whole scene with Desmond working out and you're like, wait, isn't this, like, is this, am I watching Lost right now? What's going on? Yeah, same thing.
Right. Yeah, it's exactly like Lost.
Friends, and this is in season 2, so there you go. Draw your own conclusions.
It's almost like, did any of you used to watch Power Rangers when you were a kid?
I saw a couple episodes, but that's about it.
Yeah, I mean, I just remember when they would switch over to what show they were, like, stealing the footage from. You
wasn't the black one, like, the black guy, and the yellow one was the Asian girl?
Yeah.
That was fucked up, right?
I mean, it is, but also, I mean, we're reviewing a show about, like, five white people, so we probably
don't
have that.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, at least that show had a black guy.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah.
There was Token, you know, 90s, but...
Not a ton of diversity in the Friends cast.
No.
Man, why am I thinking about Power Rangers?
I don't know. It's weird.
Yeah. Anyway. Sorry about that. This guy gets, like, a bunch of work dumped on his desk. He's real just bummed out about it. But then the camera pulls back, and he's got a monkey on that desk with a fresh beer.
Yep.
Which, you know what? If that happened to me while I was at work, I'd be pretty excited too.
You know, admittedly, I would take the beer. I would be happy that a monkey is there. I would question the monkey's existence only after I had done it. I was done enjoying my delicious, frothy, whatever brand this is.
Yeah, I would definitely.
Monkey shine beer. There you go.
I would accept the beer, but I would be a little concerned about where it came from. But as long as it was sealed, I mean, it's fine.
Yeah, well, and so, when he breaks the seal, magic flies out.
Well, as it does with all
so
beers.
So we've said what physically happens in the commercial, but like we haven't talked about the voiceover, which starts with an awful pun. It says, get that work monkey off your back.
See, I missed him saying work, and I was like, wait, but then the monkey shows up and...
He's not on
his back. The full thing is, can't get the monkey off your back? Then put it in your mouth!
Yeah, see, don't do that. That's not great.
Don't eat monkeys. They're
considering Chandler's later joke where he refers to Ross's penis as a monkey.
Yeah.
This is maybe...
Okay. I see what you did there.
You know, I was kind of also down on this episode, but now I'm... Does it have, like,
some
subtext of, like, homosexual acceptance
Phoebe... Well, Phoebe has that song at the end where she's talking about how, hey, it's cool, some guys like women, some guys like men.
Maybe they were bravely trying to sneak it past the producers and the censors in the 90s.
See, this is the thing. Everyone always talks about how, oh, Seinfeld's the greatest sitcom ever. Fuck you. Friends had this kind of subtlety and nuance to it.
Yeah.
It was subversive in a way that
they didn't keep having to say, not that there's anything wrong with that.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Ugh.
So.
But yeah, he pops open this beer and magic flies out. And he's transported to a beach full of bikini-clad women.
Yep. I mean, if you hadn't guessed by now, this is a commercial.
Yeah, so this is basically... The monkey's basically a, like, simian Spuds McKenzie.
Okay.
Yes, yeah. And it's weird, they're, like, not... The women are just kind of, like, touching him. They're not, like, massaging him or anything. They just kind of... They put a hand on him and just kind of move it back and forth a little bit.
Well, you know, standards and practices. They
it's a very...
Right.
It's a very chaste version of... an actual beer ad, which is weird, because it's like...
Yeah, this sitcom, which aired during, right after the Super Bowl, which is, like, full of raunchy beer ads.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Show an actual,
I think that's
like, kinda
weird.
Beer ad.
Like, I'm sure that the ads during this had a beer ad, and I bet it was way worse than that one.
Well, and I assume the reason that this is a lot less racy is because they were looking ahead to syndication, and they wanted to make sure this could air at, like, 6 p.m. on a...
Yeah,
you know, on
sure.
A network.
Yeah. And part of me is wondering if the incredibly fake beach set is intentional to make it look like a cheap commercial. Or
absolutely.
Listen, we can only afford so much with this like 5 minute.
I mean, the ridiculous apartment sets and Central Perk probably take up all of the soundstage. So where are they going to put a beach?
Yeah.
Right.
They have a zoo in this episode, though, and the whole, like, street set.
I assume the zoo was an on-location thing, because are they really going to ship in all those animals and, like...
Well, I don't know, this is apparently the biggest ad revenue in history or whatever. I'm sure they could afford it.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Why would they? I mean, that's more work than you need to do to just rent out part of the, like, San Diego Zoo for a bit.
Maybe. We'll have to keep an eye out and see if we can determine it when we see it. But, yeah, so at this point, the camera cuts to the friends all sitting around in the big apartment.
The camera, like, pulls back so you can see that what we're watching is actually on a TV.
Yeah.
Oh, there you go. They have a giant, like, football helmet popcorn bowl, so they are, in fact, watching the Super Bowl at this moment.
Here's the weird thing. They do, and also Joey is holding a football.
Yep.
But then at the same time, someone says, that commercial always makes me so sad. As though
this is just a regular commercial that happened to air during the Super Bowl.
Yeah, exactly. Why is Ross seeing this Super Bowl commercial early?
It's not necessarily the Super Bowl. None of them seem to be too, like... I normally expect a lot of
the episode is titled The One After the Super Bowl, and it opens with them watching just a game of football.
Yeah, that would be a little weird.
Because, you know what, if they're watching the Super Bowl, then that title does fit what happened, like, it is about what happens in this episode
because it's after that. Yeah.
Well, I mean, if you want to go with that logic, every episode takes place after the Super Bowl because the first Super Bowl was well before the show existed.
Now I guess that's true.
I mean, yeah, fair enough.
After the Super Bowl part one means literally the first Super Bowl is what you're saying.
Well, it's like the whole Gremlins problem of don't feed them after midnight. It's always after midnight because midnight happens once a day.
Sure. Yeah.
Always after and before the Super Bowl.
Yes. Yeah.
Ross brings up that the monkey in the commercial reminds him a lot of Marcel, his old
Which,
pet monkey.
As we'll find out, there's a very good reason for that.
There is a very good reason for that.
Foreshadowing.
Yeah, and even Phoebe is pointing out that they have a lot of similar characteristics beyond the fact that they're just both monkeys.
Including, as Rachel points out, being monkeys.
That's not Rachel.
Yeah,
it's Monica.
Sorry.
Monica.
Joey, however, completely misunderstands why that commercial makes Ross sad. Because he says it makes him sad, and Joey's like, yeah, but, you know, then the guy gets a bunch of beautiful women and a beer, and everything's great.
Joey. Right. Classic Joey.
Classic Joey.
Yeah.
Classic Joey. I'm going to have to edit in the classic Joey sound effect.
Classic Joey.
So they're reminiscing about the monkey, and Ross says, remember how he would borrow your hat, and then when you get it back, it'd have little monkey raisins in it. To which Chandler replies that,
Zach, considering you've done 35 of these, you're having a hard time remembering all these characters' names.
Well, I have a hard time.
I would have thought it'd be locked in by now.
I just have a hard time when it's the subtitles because, like, I can't tell who's talking until it actually
shows. Oh, sure. Okay. No, that's fair.
Also, they're all white, so they're hard to tell apart from each other.
Yeah, I always get Joey and Monica mixed up.
Yeah. So Chandler says, yeah, well, when he did it, it was funny, but when I did it to my boss's hat, all of a sudden I have this big attitude problem. So apparently, I guess he shat his boss's hat,
and that's how that's the opening.
And then
you always
take Chandler's like jokes or whatever so seriously. I don't understand it.
He said he shit in his boss's hat, and then they're like,
because he was making a dumb joke. He didn't actually do that.
Okay.
Oh, no, I think he actually did. It's just, this is a sitcom. It's a little bit of a cartoon world. Just
And Chandler's supposed to be the smart one, right? Or, anyway, compared to Joey.
I mean, everyone's the smart one compared to Joey and Phoebe.
Yeah.
Right.
And sometimes Rachel.
He's the sarcastic
out of character. That's what Joey would say. That was a classic Joey, and they gave it to Chandler. What a waste.
Yeah, it does feel like that should be more of a Joey line.
Yeah.
But Joey would still mean it. Season two, they're still, like, locking in the characters.
Yeah.
Now, if it had been about eating something, it would have been a Joey line.
Well, sure. I mean, Joey has other things he talks about than eating.
Does he, though?
Like in this episode, where he doesn't
like,
talk about
eating
at all.
I don't think he refers to eating at all in this episode.
I mean, in this episode, he talks a lot about gaslighting a woman who's clearly mentally challenged, so...
Okay, that is his other thing.
That's maybe a little dis...
I mean, that is pretty much what happens.
I'm not saying that's not what happens, I'm saying that's maybe a harsh interpretation. I am actually going to say
that's not what happens, because... I don't know if you can call it gaslighting when she's the one making up the fiction.
But they encourage her later. Anyway, we're not there yet.
They try to talk her out of it, and she refuses to listen to reason. I don't think that's the same as gaslighting.
Well, we're not there yet. Let's talk about it when we get there. So we'll get there. We cut to the shop.
Yeah.
And
cut to the shop in every episode.
The show has transitions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a funny thing.
Yeah.
Why would we... Wait, hold on. Simon, why would you... Cut to the...
Well, I just think it's really funny how, like, we always end up saying cut to the shop.
If we were going to make a t-shirt, which we should actually
cut to the shop, with that couch in the middle of it.
Well, no, and the Central Perk logo, like, just the coffee cup, because you can't actually... If we put Central Perk, we'd probably get sued by NBC.
Yeah.
Right. Cut to the... Why is that... Something... That doesn't sound right.
What's wrong?
What's wrong with you?
I don't know. I'm not sure. I got a headache all of a sudden. Anyway, we cut to the shop, and Joey has got fan mail for the first time. He's excited.
Because he works at Days of Our Lives, right?
Yep.
Right, yeah, he's
Dr. Drake Ramore.
Well, yeah. Of course, you don't need confirmation for that.
This has been well established by continuity.
Well established, yeah. I don't know why you.
Yes.
Nothing.
He got fan mail.
My subtitles got like moved past you guys because you dwelled on this too long.
Well, you know, you can pause Netflix and like click back if we get past it.
Yeah, now. Sorry, I kind of lost the pace of the conversation.
I'm back now. So Monica takes it and reads it. I assume because Joey can't read.
Because
he's too excited, he has to sit down, and she's already sitting in the
couch.
I like
the idea that Joey's secretly illiterate, though.
Well,
I mean, I do too, but I don't think the show quite went full. It's Always Sunny with that.
I mean, he has to read his lines, so somehow.
Does true. He, though? Maybe there's somebody standing off camera mouthing them to him.
Wait, you don't think he can read words, but he can read lips? That's way harder.
Okay. Well, except it's not because you're reading, like, you're just making your lips do the same thing their lips are doing.
Yeah. Okay. But anyway, this one wrote a very sweet, like, romantic letter to...
So I pulled
not
it
to Joey, but to his character.
Yeah, it says,
on the
dear,
show.
It says, "Dear Dr. Ramore, know that I love you and would do anything to have you."
Yeah.
Signed, your not-so-secret admirer, Erica Ford. And then, oh wait, P.S., enclosed, please find 14 of my eyelashes.
Yeah.
And then Joey smiles and nods all excitedly.
Yep.
He's excited. Right. He even says,
it's same reaction we got when we realized we had hate mail, so I get it.
Totally.
He does
hate mail is way different than somebody sending us part of their body.
I mean, stalkers and hate mail, they're like it's just another kind of thing you would normally want,
He says, I've got my own stalker, so,
Well, no, before that, he just thinks he's got, like, a crazy fan. Monica points out that it was not addressed to
the
studio or anything. It was addressed to their building.
Yep.
And that and woman must have dropped it off. Like, she was in their apartment.
Yeah, there's
and
no
stamp.
And then
he gets
so
excited that
mail.
This isn't just a fan, it's a stalker. And that means he's even... like, bigger than he thought he was.
Right.
So once again, we get a plot that, if this wasn't a sitcom, would be, like, a horror thriller, but they play it for laughs.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, I mean, they even kind of lampshade that in this episode by referencing Misery at some point.
Yep.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So at this point, another guy
walks in,
right? Oh, right.
Ross.
Wait, what'd you say?
Another guy. Well, I skipped the part where Ross comes in, because the... He doesn't really...
Yeah, some other guy.
Well,
Ross comes in first.
Zach doesn't actually watch this show. He just makes it up every week.
Yeah, sometimes it feels that way.
The finale of Friends is just Zach waking up in bed with a snow globe, and he just imagined everything.
So he just comes in and says that he's going to go visit Marcel at the zoo.
Well, he mentioned something at a paleontology conference because he can't go a single episode without reminding us he's a paleontologist.
Well, I don't... I mean, Joey can't go a single episode without reminding us he's an actor.
Yeah, but that actually comes up in his plots, usually, whereas Ross's paleontology has nothing to do with this episode.
Nope. I just realized if this was the only episode you'd seen of Friends, you would have no idea what Chandler, Monica, or Rachel do for a living.
Well, to be fair, like, having seen the entire show multiple times, I still don't know what Chandler does, because that's kind of a key point.
Yeah.
Well, he's like an office worker.
Right, but his specific, like, it's a running joke that nobody knows what his specific job is.
Right. Yeah, but I mean, even that you don't get from this. He's just hanging around in a suit all the time.
That's true. Like, if he hadn't mentioned
he
had a boss.
We've all seen the show, so we know what Monica and Rachel and Chandler do, but, if I showed someone just this episode and said, hey, Zach, what's Monica's job? I think you'd be hard-pressed to answer it.
Yeah, I would have no idea.
Another thing they wouldn't know is when that other guy walks in, as you said, Zach, is if that character is someone we're supposed to recognize or not. And they kind of, like, leave that hanging, but it turns out, nope, it's just some guy we haven't seen before.
Well, yeah, and this is our first guest appearance, but like we said, None of us actually know who this guest is.
That's the thing, is I was like, did I forget this guy? Because I don't recognize him. Yep. And they hang on him.
It's like, nope, he's a one-off guest star who was probably famous in the 90s, but certainly isn't today.
They hang on him like you're supposed to recognize him, either because he's a recurring character or because he's a guest, which I didn't realize until later when the other guests start showing up that there were going to be any. So, yeah.
Well, it's obvious. Right. It's obviously he's not, like, somebody we're supposed to already know, because Rachel just calls him that really cute guy, but he says he's here again, which kind of implies that maybe we've seen him around before, even though we haven't.
So Phoebe gets all flustered and has them act like she's telling a funny story, so you know, she'll look interesting to him, and he just sort of walks up and introduces himself. This is
so
Rob
there's a great touch here where she tells everyone, okay, pretend I said something funny and then laugh, and so when he walks up, everyone does a fake laugh. And they play the laugh track to time exactly with their laughs, which I thought was kind of
I didn't pick up on that. You're right. That's
almost
really
like
good.
A cry for help from the show's makers. Pretend I just said something really funny and laugh.
See, I feel like they're just lampshading the, you know, general conceit of a laugh track.
Yeah.
But
I didn't even pick up on that level of it, but you're right.
Yeah, there
you're
you
totally
go.
Right. But basically he explains that he's in charge of organizing singers to perform for kids at, like, libraries across New York, and he wants to know if Phoebe would be interested in that.
So I assume this means that he's been coming there for a while, because she's not playing. Like, he didn't...
She plays there a lot, so yeah, clearly... And, I mean, since Rachel said he's here again, like, clearly he's been hanging around and probably listening to her play and stuff.
Yeah.
Okay.
But this is all, like, details we're left to fill in our minds, because none of that is stated.
This wasn't set off in previous episodes.
This episode got kind of mixed reviews, and a lot of it was that they spend so much time cramming guests into it that they kind of didn't have enough room for jokes and story, and I can see that.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I think, like, the thing that probably works the best as actually just, like, the random plotline that would be on our normal episode is probably the stalker bit, because it's not... It's just him and one... Like, she's a guest star, but they're not just cramming them in there like they do.
Well, somebody has a date that ends up being a short-term, you know, relationship that goes weird. It's a pretty stock-standard Friends plot.
Right.
Yeah.
So Chandler and Joey are home, and the doorbell rings, and it's Erica.
The buzzer,
yeah. And it's Erica, and they freak out, because it's the stalker, which is weird, because, like, he was excited a second ago.
He was excited in the abstract of
having a stalker, but having to confront her could be a rough scene.
Fair.
I mean, like, stalker confrontations can end in death. You don't want that.
Yeah.
Sure.
So his first reaction is to grab a frying pan to beat her with what she walks
We all know that's going to end well, as, you know, they've got that curse going on where it's all, they always end up getting hurt, those two.
Classic Chandler bit, you know, says, hey, that's a great idea. Although, you know, we might want to back up, though, just in case she's not a cartoon.
Yeah.
Right. Which... honestly, considering I was just defending this show as being kind of a cartoon, well,
it works.
I mean,
you know,
yeah.
Once again, I think the show is a lot more self-aware than people give it credit for.
Yeah. But so their next move is to try and go into the apartment across the hall, where, you know, the other apartment that we see all the time.
Right.
Well, which is classic Joey and Chandler too, because oh man, we're in trouble. Well, let's get the girls involved with this.
There's a pretty good bit where they say, like, oh man, the one time they're not home.
Yeah, that was one of the better jokes in this episode.
Yeah, because
usually they just walk right in without even knocking.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a sitcom. Yeah. Everything is perfectly convenient at all times in service of the jokes.
Yeah.
Right.
Until it's not. Yeah.
Right.
So they run back in.
There's a funny bit where Joey suggests just walking out of the building and she won't recognize him. And Chandler points out that would only work if he was a radio star.
So they go back in, Joey grabs his frying pan, and Chandler goes for a bottle of dish soap, because it's the next best weapon they own.
Honestly, that's probably a pretty good one. You spray dish soap in somebody's eyes, that's close to mace.
Which he insists upon forcing Joey to wait to open the door until he opens said dish soap.
That's my favorite joke in this episode, honestly. He's like, are you ready? He goes, wait, and just pops it open.
That's a joke that could have worked great both ways, because you could have also had him trying to spray her with it and it not working because he didn't open the cap, and that would have been equally funny. Right.
Yep.
I just like that he's readying an action.
Yep.
Yes. Yeah. Joey throws open the door, and it's no one other than Brooke Shields, who
very attractive woman. And to punctuate this, Chandler just like squeezes the dish soap right into pretty much his face.
Right. Yeah. It's a visual metaphor for very highbrow ejaculated at the sight of Brooke Shields.
Of course. Yeah. Yeah, and of course, because it's Brooke Shields, they immediately stop freaking out. They're just like, oh, this is fine.
Yeah, it's fine. She's a stalker, but she's hot, so there you go.
Yeah, this is what we were talking about before. This episode's a little, it was in the 90s.
It's 90s problematic, as are most things from the 90s.
Yeah, like the Power Rangers thing you mentioned with the racial stuff, the colors.
Yeah, the tokens. So. And
Power Rangers. What?
So anyway,
Ross is in the zoo.
Yeah.
Yeah, for some reason there's a transition with a plane.
Well, because he's flying to LA.
He said he was
flying. Right, because of the paleontology conference, right?
Yep.
Like, I'm actually surprised there wasn't an additional fade from the plane to an establishing shot of LA fade into the zoo.
Yeah, that's actually kind of weird, because normally establishing, like, if they're going to a new city, establishing that city is usually like a thing, isn't it?
In a lot of shows and movies and stuff, but, I mean, the plane gets it across because he's already said he's going to LA.
Yeah,
there's a lot of stuff in this episode, so they probably didn't want to cram for time, or, like...
Yeah, they're already, like, desperate for time.
So you know what, I think you were right, this looks like a real zoo.
There's no way they built all of this as a set.
Yeah.
So the next guest we get is Fred Willard, who is the director?
I guess he's the zoo director or something. He is a person of authority at the zoo.
Yeah. He says he's the administrator.
Ross is looking around in the monkey area, and he can't find Marcel. Mm-hmm. So he's got to talk to Fred Willard and say, hey, where's that monkey I donated?
Go ahead.
What? Fred Willard has to explain that, unfortunately, Marcel is dead.
Yeah.
Like, that's not a thing that they would have sent him a letter or called him about, you know, knowing that he donated the monkey to the zoo.
I kind of thought that they wouldn't. Like, get out of my face.
Yeah, I mean, they might not necessarily even have his contact information. Like, he gives them the monkey, that's the end of the transaction. They don't really need to stay in touch with him after that.
So, I'm a pretty big Fred Willard fan, and this is probably my favorite part. He just puts a lot of really good emphasis into the jokes they give him.
Yeah, I mean, the lines he gives, like, if we just read them out, wouldn't be particularly funny, but Fred Willard delivering them makes them a lot better.
Yeah.
Fred Willard's hilarious.
Especially considering he is joking about a dead monkey.
I mean, even if he does jerk off in porn theaters, why go to a porn theater if you're not gonna?
That's barely even really a crime if you
think
about
it. So did Pee-wee, and we've all forgiven him, and he gets a new Netflix special, so it's okay. Yeah.
It's the lesser of the sex crimes, let's say.
it's a victimless sex crime.
Also, Fred Willard is old as fuck, and he probably doesn't understand computers, so he can't just go home.
use the internet like a normal person. A porn theater is already kind of weird to me. The idea of a porn theater that you can't even are you supposed to just hold it in your mind on the drive home?
I assume it's the same concept as strip clubs.
And then whip it out in there, right? So.
I guess that's
there are that's private,
true. But I also, I've also never understood strip clubs for the same reason.
Yeah,
yeah, no, I just don't understand the going to see sex stuff in public.
No, me neither. But we're millennials.
Like, hey, apparently, Fred Willard didn't either. So anyway, he makes some cracks about Ross's dead monkey, which is pretty shitty.
He's got a good bit where he's like, well, he got sick, and then he got sicker, and then he got better.
And then he died.
And then he died.
Died.
Yeah.
Like, just fucking with Ross's emotions at this point.
Yeah.
Well, it's like he's trying to let it down easy, but he's failing at it. It's pretty good.
Right. And then he gives this old saying, sometimes monkeys die.
Which, I mean, It's true. I don't think it's really a saying, but it's,
yeah,
it's a
I really
true
like
statement
this
of fact.
Oh,
so Russ, that's say he thinks someone should have called him about it, and
yeah,
he just
yeah
apologizes, but doesn't offer any further explanation about it, and gives him.
He does.
Well, he does offer his condolences. He reaches into his jacket.
Yep.
And gets an envelope full of Zubucks.
Like, which, he has this again, ready to go for any contingency.
Yeah. Yeah, like, he didn't know what Ross was there for, so the idea...
Oh, I assume he has, like, a... Like, his jacket, or the suit pocket, is just full of packages
Zubucks.
Yeah, he's always prepared to deal with any unsatisfied customers and whatever, and, like, make them, like, calm them down by offering them Zubucks.
Do you think he has, say, Scrooge McDuck money bin filled with Zubucks? Oh, God.
I do now.
I always said zoo books, but that's a different thing.
He's always prepared. He's the Batman of zookeepers.
Yeah, no, I had a Scrooge McDuck vault full of zoo books as a kid.
Yeah, that's, yeah, sure. Everybody did. Anyway, we cut to
but,
the school.
Why don't we take a quick break? Because we're going to get into one of the other main bits here. So let's take a quick break.
Taking a shower, you can borrow my bathroom. And when I'm asleep, I dream you're moving next week. I crumple the note and set the food in stuff for shoebox. The shoebox of lies. It's under my bed, it's never been read. It's in with my school stuff and my mom never cleans. There from my first little fib, when I still wore a bib, to my latest attempt at pretending I'm someone who's not 17 and doesn't know what you mean. When doctors to single moms are still in all my shoebox. Shoebox, the shoebox of lies. The shoebox, shoebox, shoebox of lies.
All right, we're back. Hold on. Should have opened up the Netflix tab before starting the recording again. Now we're back.
Honest Netflix pausing and unpausing on podcast.
Yeah, so we're back in New York now. We're at the library. There's a bunch of kids gathered for Phoebe's performance. Meanwhile,
so
on the back.
I have a quick question.
Yeah, what?
The New York Public Library is fucking huge. I've walked past it, but I've never been in. The room that they're in is,
oh, they're in,
like,
a tiny, tiny room, yeah.
Yeah, like, yeah. Where are they?
I mean,
they?
This probably isn't the
well, like, there's
New
a bunch
York
of kids' books on one side. It looks like it's just, like,
a kids'
like
area,
a
little kids' area.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. I'm sure there's more than one library location in New York City. Like, this is probably
right,
a smaller, like, sub-library somewhere.
Yeah.
Well, but they show the establishing shot is of the library with the lions and everything, like in Ghostbusters, you know, the library.
Yeah,
everything in New York looks like it's ancient and gigantic because, you know, New York. But there you go.
But yeah, I was just curious.
I like you say ancient when, like,
well, I mean,
American
it's done in the style of, like, Roman temples and shit. That's what I mean by that.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah,
yeah. But Monica, Rachel, and Chandler are in the back talking about this Erica situation. And
you have to use the cut TM to get to her gym, which sucks because cut's such a useless move, and it's just the whole
God
thing.
God damn it, I hate you so much. I like that they actually bothered to come with their friend to go play for little kids. Like,
yeah, they're supportive.
Yeah, I guess they didn't have anything else to do.
Also, they don't do anything all day.
Yeah, apparently not.
I mean, these six are literally, each other is the only thing they have in their lives. There's no one else, no other hobbies.
Right.
They always have to be there for each other.
Anytime anyone else tries to enter
the
world, they just...
I'll be there for you.
Yep. Clap, 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 clap.
So,
Chandler is explaining the situation and that she thinks he's actually the doctor. And they're like, why are they on a date? And he's like, oh, because she's hot. Duh.
Yep.
Like,
yeah,
of course.
Yeah, because she's Brooke Shields.
Yeah. Which, I mean, it's stupid, but, like, that said, for the established character of Joey, okay, sure.
They
get to a point where Chandler kind of backpedals because he's trying to defend Joey, where he's saying, like, listen, just because she's crazy doesn't mean that, you know, she's doesn't deserve love, right? And they just kind of glare at him. He's like, listen, I'm not the one trying to fuck her.
Now, hold on. You said that, but I want to point out something that, yeah, that was the most jarring thing in this entire episode for me.
Is it the line that made me rewind and put subtitles on to because make sure I heard right?
Because he says he wants to buff her, B-O-F-F, and I was like, I know this is a show from the 90s, and language was a little stricter then, but holy shit, boff? Really?
No, they couldn't say nail, they couldn't say screw, they couldn't say bone.
You know what? I'm gonna defend this.
Standards and practices.
I'm gonna defend this by saying, like, benign terms like boff are inherently funnier than just actually saying fuck.
I mean, it was funny, but mostly because I was like, did they really just use that word?
Right, but that's the whole point, is the, like, the fact that they're clearly swearing without using an actual swear word, there's an incongruity there that's inherently funny.
They want to frack.
It's like, it's like saying God fucking darn.
No, it's not frack. God damn it.
It's like smeg.
I don't know. This kind of reminds other made me of when we were talking words. About the whole Smurf you thing a few episodes ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds weird.
So they're,
I like it.
So everyone is sitting down, and by everyone, I mean a bunch of children and, like,
a bunch of children.
A whole bunch of adults, actually.
Well, they're parents. Well,
yeah.
Right. Yeah, they're parents, yeah.
Yeah.
But Phoebe is getting ready in front, and she's clearly very nervous. And, I can't even remember this stupid guest's name because he's not a guest star.
Chris Isaac.
Chris Isaac, yes.
Yeah, guy with two first names. That's always good.
Yeah. And she makes a joke about how she should imagine the audience in their underwear because, you know, that's the classic thing.
Yep.
And he points out that that's what got the last guy fired.
Nah.
So.
Yep.
Pedophilia.
Yep. Pedophilia.
Hilarious.
So.
Hey. Never said it was perfect.
So there's.
Just that it's great.
So she starts singing this song about grandma.
Well, what I was going to say is that before that, to calm her nerves, he kisses her.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
And at that point, I'm thinking he just, like, just smooched her in front of, like, this whole audience. Yep. That feels weirdly, maybe just a little inappropriate. Well, but then what happens next completely shunted that out of my mind.
There's a bus driver in the window that I just now noticed. What's going on there?
Yeah, I noticed that, too.
His hand is up, and he's giving the side eye to, like, wherever his hand is. It's really weird.
Oh, what is that guy?
So
it's just like a fat bus driver in a double-breasted suit.
Yep.
So his mouth is slightly agape. Like, it's weird.
That is weird.
So she starts singing this song about grandmas, and basically it's a song about how sometimes grandmas die, which is not...
Which was really funny in the 90s, acting like you're going to sing a children's song, but it's about the harsh realities of life.
Here's the thing. I'm actually going to defend this, because the way she presents it is fairly kid-friendly. And this is a concept that kids should have to face.
Yeah,
but you,
like,
might not.
I don't call it kid-friendly. I think it's too abrupt to be kid-friendly.
Yeah, that's the thing is, like, there are songs about that. Like, definitely, there are, I mean, not Raffy, but
There's kids' media. Like, Bridge to Terabithia is a kid's book about dealing with death, but,
I mean,
you know.
Sesame Street is, like, renowned for when one of the, like, beloved human stars of the show died. Instead of, like, just replacing him or whatever, they actually devote an entire episode to explaining to the kids,
Hooper died. They don't just go, here's a song about grandma, and then she died, like, which is basically what happens. Mm-hmm. It's, like, a little rough. And also, we'll get to it when we get there, but, like, you point out that they literally make out in front of all these kids.
Yep.
She will later find out that parents complained about her song, but not about the person who hired her just macking on her right before.
Well, what I was thinking was, well, yeah, that's weird. You're right. I didn't even think about that.
Honestly, I feel like in real life, parents would be, like, more upset about that because, you know, public displays of affection and anything that's even sex adjacent.
As long as they're not,
like the most forbidden
making
thing.
Out there, right?
Well,
there.
What I was gonna say
is when she's singing her song, they show a shot of all the parents off to the side, and they're clearly, like, they don't like it. They're just covering their mouths. If this was happening in real life, someone would have, like, come and slapped her.
Yeah.
Or,
like, and they wouldn't have also, been nice about it.
Real quick, another thing I
they
hate about this
They wouldn't have been nice about when they slapped her.
Another thing I hate about this bit is that the three remaining friends are sitting in the audience, and they're, like, sort of waving back and forth while she's singing, and they're the only ones moving or doing anything while during that. Also, they're the only adults that are sitting down. They look ridiculous and creepy right there.
Well, they look ridiculous, well, but I could see Chandler roping them into that, because that's the kind of, like...
I actually
that's
thought...
That's the kind of thing he'd get up to.
I thought
well,
it was
here's
funny.
Here's the thing, like, there's... There's sort of a metafiction established there of, okay, yeah, these guys are technically adults, but they don't have, like, they aren't parents, they aren't,
yeah,
don't have any real responsibilities. They're essentially on the same level as these kids.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I mean, they don't you know, it always shocks me how much depth we plumb out of these episodes, because on the surface, this is just such a bland sitcom, but, you know, if you really pay attention and you watch for the semiotics at play, it's... incredibly complex.
Well, I mean, after 36
and
episodes,
this episode's a
you gotta
less
figure
than
we've
some,
got the
but
pulse
it's still
of
there.
The show real well.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, in the next scene, we have the date, which she is dressed like... This is the middle of the day, right?
Mm-hmm.
It has to be.
From the established
shot,
we've
got
it is.
Yeah, so... They are, like, dressed to the nines, which, okay.
Drinking. Having lunch in this fancy restaurant with red wine.
Yeah, she has, like, a maroon evening gown and a, like, scarf.
Yep.
Well, clearly it's an afternoon weird. Gown, but, you know.
Sure. Okay.
Oh, whatever.
I guess the first thing she opens with is, like, oh, God, sorry, I lost my Netflix place.
Well, she's just shocked at, like, she's talking about all the difficult surgery that he's had to do on the show.
Oh, yeah. She says she's surprised he was able to meet her so quickly, because I'm assuming the show was just on, like, 20 minutes ago.
Right,
or something.
Yeah,
she's like,
right.
How'd you get here so fast?
Yeah, this is where it's revealed where she's not only crazy, she's also rock stupid, which is going to be fun through line for this episode.
I wouldn't even say stupid. She's just disconnected from reality.
Well, yeah.
Because she's like, you were just reconnecting someone's spinal cord. And Joey's response is... Well, you know, it was pretty tricky. Like, it actually took over 10 hours to do that operation, but they only showed it for, like, 2 minutes.
And she says, who's they, which I liked.
Yeah.
Like, wait.
Right.
There's got to be a name for some kind of, like, mental condition where, as an adult, you don't understand the difference between fiction and reality, right?
Well, no, this is an actual, like, diagnosable psychological delusion where people think that stories are real. I don't remember the name of it, but it actually exists.
Where you can't separate.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
Yeah, I don't know.
Yep.
Yeah, she's at a point where she doesn't even understand that, like, this is being presented to her. She just says, like, oh, yeah, what happens in the TV box is reality.
Yeah.
There's no effort
made
he's
trying
to
play along with it, but even, like, his version of it is too real for her.
Yeah.
So
if I had to guess, Simon, I'd say that she doesn't have an issue with cartoons because those are so clearly fake. It's just live action stuff that her brain can identify as being real.
I can't pretend to understand what goes on in the head of someone who has such an affliction. And also, I'm 100% convinced the writers made no effort to try to understand that either. So
what I was trying to say is that, like, that's the part I don't like about this presentation of her. She's not just doesn't understand the difference. She's also just, like, bog standard TV crazy.
Yeah.
Because she starts trying to eat his hand.
Right, and that actually circles back to where I was saying this is an actual, like, actual thing that happens to people. Like, that makes this kind of worse, because it's playing off a real-life disability as a joke.
Yeah,
and also, like, presenting it wrong and saying, like, and also those people are just crazy. Like,
because she says, like, I want to eat your hands, and he makes a joke about how his watch would fall off. And she starts, like, she throws her head back and cackles and, like, rocks her chair back and forth for a few seconds in a way
and
that is just okay.
And also he lets her, so...
Right, yeah. And I just want to say, like, we talk a lot about stuff in the show being dated and how you wouldn't get away with that stuff today, but this is something that you absolutely still see today. Not necessarily with this particular delusion, but, like, you see a lot of stuff with, like, like Asperger's or stuff on the autism spectrum
being
horribly,
like,
misrepresented.
Psychopathy and where, like, every psychopath is a serial killer and all that stuff.
Yeah,
you're right.
It's definitely still a real problem today. Mm-hmm. It's not something we fixed since the 90s.
So, they, and speaking of things that have been around forever, someone chokes and calls for a
doctor. Now, you are
in the house.
Skipping ahead. What? Because first, she starts licking his hand.
Why? Yep. Didn't we? I said that.
You mentioned she tried to eat his hand, but then after that, like, they negotiate
like
down to her licking
a blow job. Yeah.
Basically.
He negotiates her down to licking a single finger, and then she goes, like, hog wild on his entire face.
It's super creepy.
Yeah, and
now,
he's
if this had happened in the library between
please
she
don't
and
take
the guy,
me saying
that
she goes
been...
hog wild on his entire fist out of context, people.
Yep. Well, I mean, this
I'm
is
cutting
a...
that out. I'm cutting that out and using it as my ringtone.
Zach, what do you mean you're cutting it out? I'm the one that edits this show.
Okay, fair enough.
Why would you?
Anyway,
someone in the background starts to choke.
Yep.
Oldest play in the sitcom. Like, this probably dates back to old stage shows back in the 1800s.
Oh, yeah.
Somebody's pretending to be a doctor, and then somebody else starts choking and reveals their facade.
Yep. Right.
Yeah.
But he actually, we'll get to it in a sec here. He actually has a good excuse.
Yeah.
But
good in context of Joey and Crazy Woman.
Yeah. But first, before resolving this, we cut back to Ross, who's still in the zoo.
So this is my favorite part and my favorite guest star of the episode.
Gee, I wonder why.
I think I might be with you on this.
So, Dan Castellaneta, a.k.a. Homer Simpson, because I would guess most people probably don't know what he looks like.
Yeah. Right. And he sounds absolutely nothing like Homer Simpson.
Well, the thing about Dan Castellaneta is he does a lot of character actor, background parts in a lot of sitcoms, and he's also incredibly good at voices. In addition to Homer Simpson, he's half the people in Springfield. So, it's really easy to not know he's Homer Simpson if you see him in something live action.
His normal voice kind of sounds like the devil, the robot devil in Futurama, but not
who he
so
also voices
over the top. I know.
Yeah.
So,
Ross is just hanging out at the zoo where he found out that his old pet died. He's just eating some dried oranges.
These are dried apricots.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah. I thought he was. I actually didn't see what it was at first, and I thought it was the feed they give you at petting zoos, and he was just
that would have been a good gag to just not reference that at all.
I like how he's eating them out of a Ziploc. That's a snack he actually packed before going there.
Oh, and that's such a Ross character thing.
That's
so perfect. But I also like that there is a it's never mentioned, but there's just a banana sitting on a flat.
That's the part two
him.
Of his snack right there. I guess.
Well, I just like the implication that he went to a monkey house with a banana, probably to give his monkey.
Oh, to give to Marcel, and then he's not there. Oh, that's so sad.
So, I really wanted to see a thing of him peeling the banana and throwing it out, pouring one out for his homie.
Oh.
Oh, man. Yes.
That's a missed opportunity.
So, we have a just a quick scene here where Dan Castellaneta's janitor character, who I don't think is ever given a name, just sidles up to Ross and sort of conspicuously says, meet me
in the reptile
meet
house.
Me, meet me
or it's in the
waiter.
Bat house,
it's the nocturnal house in 15 minutes.
And they do a gay sort of a gay panic joke, except it's not super bad because it's kind of respectful, where Ross is just like, I'm just not into guys like that. He doesn't really shame
him.
He says, that's not
$2 instead, so that's a funny little punchline.
Yeah, I don't know. You're right. They could have been worse.
But also, he offers him a bribe to not have sex with him.
Well, it's like, I'm sorry. I know. I'm a catch. Yeah, would have really liked to have sex with me, but
I don't know. This scene actually made me really uncomfortable.
Well, not to excuse anti-gay humor or whatever, but it's super in character of Ross for him to feel really guilty about man, I'm not into that.
Oh, yeah,
I feel bad
level,
about turning him down, so I got to give him something.
Yep.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah,
but then.
But it's not about gay sex.
I'm gonna just call him.
I'm
just gonna call him Homer. Says it's no. It's
like
not that.
Some
like
insider
your monkey isn't
given
dead.
About Marcel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we cut to commercial.
So the plot thickens. Yep. But now we're back with Joey and Erica at the.
There's a lot of quick cuts in this episode.
Yeah, it's like we said. It feels like they were very. Even though it's a double episode, they're really pressed for time.
They're not stretching
so many guest stars into it.
You know, I gotta be honest. I didn't realize how much they cut between plots when I was watching it before this. It's only now when we're actually talking through it that it occurs to me, because I think I just kind of re-edited it in my mind.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
So somehow Monica. Oh no, I'm sorry. That's too far ahead.
Even you're doing it. Yes. But yeah, Eric is confused why Joey didn't help that guy, and he starts to explain, "Hi, I'm a neurosurgeon."
Yep.
So they don't
just stop there because that makes sense. Yep. You could just say like, "I'm not trained in that kind of thing, and I could have hurt him."
Yeah.
Which,
yeah.
To be fair, like any reasonable person would say, "How the hell are you a doctor and you don't know the Heimlich?" Because everyone can learn the Heimlich.
Sure.
In fairness, this is old, but the Heimlich is pretty dangerous. They don't really use it anymore.
Yeah,
it can really
but,
hurt somebody.
I mean, I'm pretty sure at the time this was made, the Heimlich, at least in like mainstream sitcom land, was considered the most effective way to deal with
it. And you would learn it, I'm sure you would learn it in like early medical
first
school.
First aid class,
okay,
yeah.
Sure,
I also really like that we don't actually see the guy again, and like they don't say if somebody else helped
he could
him
just
or not.
Be
he
dead.
Might say he's probably dead.
Yeah.
The camera's in a different position. He could be... Well, he could.
Oh, yeah, he's right there
position.
In the.
We can't see him.
No, he's right there in the background. He's like wiping his mouth with his napkin and stuff. It's implied he got it out and he's fine now.
Okay.
Oh, I wasn't paying attention. I don't remember which extra it was.
So he starts to tell her that he's not really a doctor, but she says, "No, don't tell me anything. You don't have to explain yourself to me." And then he tries to say something again, and then she just starts making out with him.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's the quote unquote classic sitcom bit where he's like, "Hey, I," and then she like interrupts him, kisses him, and then breaks the kiss and is like, "Now what were you gonna say?" And then he changes his mind.
Yeah.
And it's like it's kind of sliding
it's
into
just she
classic.
Kisses him. She like grabs him by the lapels and just holds him in place while she just
and also then she starts eating his hand again. Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah.
Hey, don't kink shame. I bet you there's people out there who are into that sort of thing.
Joey seems like he's into it.
I mean, she's just nibbling on his finger. That's like foreplay. That's a thing. That's
totally. Yeah. And honestly, if Brooke Shields is going to do anything to my hand, I'm probably okay with it.
The thing is, I think that the way they're portraying her, I don't think it's kink. I think she wants to eat his hand because they're making her into like a crazy, crazy person. Right.
You know what? So, yeah. I bet you there's still somebody who's into that.
Sure. Probably somewhere.
There are some well-known cases of that,
But anyway, they somehow Phoebe got to play another song. No one rushed the stage and made her stop.
She didn't immediately get escorted away.
Because she's singing a song about... What's this one?
This one's about how you shouldn't sleep with people to make them like you.
Yeah, she's like, sometimes
which is a good lesson to give to people.
It's a good lesson, but this isn't the right avenue for that lesson.
Here's the thing about the song. Like, she opens up just saying, sometimes you'll feel like you want to sleep with people just to make them like you. And then she, like, breaks and says, but don't, almost as if it's an afterthought.
Yeah.
Yes, I think she realized halfway through the song, wait, this is the wrong message to send to kids.
Well, no, the chorus of the song is that's another thing you shouldn't do. So presumably every verse is another bad idea.
But my understanding of it was she keeps accidentally doing this, starting to sing about stuff that's not appropriate, having to swerve, and she's just worked that into a theme.
She was up all night preparing these songs.
Yeah. I think she's literally just fucking ad-libbing these things. I don't think.
Oh, I don't think so at all. I think these were all totally planned.
See, and but that doesn't. When has Phoebe ever planned anything?
Yeah, I think she's.
That's
just...
true, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
I think she's just improving these.
Yeah, like she realized shortly after starting that she has no idea how to be appropriate towards kids and is just winging it.
Yeah.
So, her new boyfriend, whose name I don't recall, and they keep making out, comes up and says, "Hi, you know, like I thought it was great."
You know what? I'd say
I was expecting him to come up and reprimand her, but he compliments her.
Zach, I just want to say, like, I'd reprimand you for not remembering his name, but I'm guessing at this point Phoebe doesn't remember his name. So,
do you guys? Because I don't think so.
No, absolutely not.
It was Rob.
Ron something?
It was Rob, and I think it was Rob Dunham.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
I remember his fake celebrity name, Chris Isaac, but I don't remember
his you don't think that's actually his name? You think he changed his name?
No. I think that's his name. I was calling him a fake celebrity.
Yeah.
Because he's not really famous.
Well, he very well could have changed his name.
Let's be honest, sounds a little bit nom de plume. So.
Yeah, that sounds like a stage name.
Yeah.
So he says, like, you know, I thought it was great, but the parents were kind of hoping you would sing songs about barnyard animals, which I would think if you just saw that, you would be a little more specific about exactly what you want.
Yeah.
You know, at this point, he doesn't know her that well, and he just thinks she needs just a gentle correction.
Yeah.
And also, well,
and the other thing he mentions that's somewhat relevant to the plot is that the kids loved her, and the reason was because she didn't, like, dance around certain subjects or sugarcoat stuff. She just told the truth. She said all the things that parents refuse to tell kids, which
is
honestly
gonna get echoed in a horrible way later.
Right. Like, but I mean, if we'll this was in a, like, show that wasn't an irreverent sitcom, that's actually kind of a fair point, is that there's a lot of stuff that we dance around that kids do need to understand and parents are scared to tell kids.
And like we said, though, like, Sesame Street can do that kind of stuff really well. Like, there's also the one about, like, the kid whose dad is in prison that, like, it's not shying away from it, but it uses tact.
Yeah, she's not really
like I said, if this wasn't an irreverent
She's not going HBO on them. She's not being like, you know, come at the king, best not miss, here's some titties or whatever. It's, you know.
Oh, man, show me that version of Friends. I would watch the hell out of that version.
She's still
of
being very PG, is what I'm saying.
Sure, okay. Yes, fact.
Give me Phoebe, Mother of Dragons.
Yeah. Oh.
So we cut.
So they kiss again, and we cut to bats.
Bats in the nocturnal house, and Dan Castellaneta is
waxing poetic.
Yeah.
So here's the thing: I have to believe that they just let him ad lib stuff here because 90% of his dialogue here has nothing to do with the plot.
Yeah.
And is just like just like some poetic ramblings that
absolutely
sound like Dan
script,
Castellaneta
so
material.
That's your first red light.
Because that was something he did a lot in the early seasons of The Simpsons was they would just kind of have spots where they'd be like, okay, just have Dan make something up here, and then he would just rant. Like, there's one of the most beloved scenes from early Simpsons is Homer's bit about being a sugar baron, and that entire thing was just a off-the-cuff read from Dan.
Is that the one that's like the dizzying highs, the terrifying lows, the creamy middles?
Yep. And about the town elders clucking their tongues and wagging their fingers and saying, what shall we do with this Homer Simpson?
I have never watched an episode of The Simpsons from start to finish.
Wow, really?
Jesus.
Yeah,
man.
And at this point, like, I'm sure that there are, like, I'm sure I would enjoy it a lot. But at this point, it's a weird point of pride, and I just won't do it.
Well, and also, like, just from the point of cultural osmosis, you've seen so much of the, or heard most of the good stuff. Just
I know every bit.
The same way that I feel I don't need to ever watch Citizen Kane because of all the references on The Simpsons to Citizen Kane. I feel like I've gotten all the good stuff out of the way.
You could pretty much edit Citizen Kane out of clips that they've had on The Simpsons.
So,
He
is saying,
what'd you say, Simon?
Don't worry about it, Luke.
What'd you say, Simon? No, what'd he say?
I said you could pretty much edit Citizen Kane out of bits that they've had on The Simpsons.
Yeah, like, they reference Citizen Kane a lot.
Like making a whole new thing out of, like, cutting up clips of something else.
What are you talking about, Luke?
No, like, I don't...
So, I don't know what's going on with Luke, but to move on...
Yeah, sorry.
It's fine. So, the... Reptile, or at the whatever nocturnal house. Yeah, he's saying
bats are reptiles. You heard it here first, guys.
You got me. And he says, like, he calls the bats sightless specters of the macabre, which is really great. I like it.
Yeah, that's got to be a Dan Castellaneta ad lib because there's no way the Friends writers came up with that.
Yeah, and then Ross has to snap him out of it and remind him, you were going to tell me about my monkey.
He's like, hey, my monkey. And he's like, oh, yeah, right. So he tells him that...
right, which means he did not... Like, I like to think he just totally forgot about that. He
walked in there, saw the bats, and zoned out.
He's just like, dude, come in here and listen to me talk about these bats. It'll be fun.
So,
it turns out that the director lied. He says, the zoo? You believe everything the zoo tells you?
Ross answers, that's the only thing they ever have.
Open your eyes, Ross. Yeah. The zoo is a lie.
So they say...
Peek behind the curtain.
He says, it's a cover-up because they gave the monkey away to the people that do the beer ads from the beginning of the episode.
Yeah.
And... Yeah, I mean, That's pretty much the content. It's just a lot of ad-libbing from
yes,
Dan.
Yeah, because he keeps catching the eye of other animals, and he's like, and then just oh, talking, hi, Mr. Possum. Like,
now we're talking about this possum for a while.
Yeah.
Upside down denizen of the night.
Yeah. And then after he tells him that, he says, now what's this information worth it to you? And Ross is like, are you trying to bribe me? Maybe. But you already told me everything, which is good. Yeah.
Yeah.
Is
which I assumed they were going to go full circle and he was going to bribe him with the zoo bucks, but that didn't happen.
No.
Yeah.
No, we just get a great, like, visual reaction from
Dan. He just realizes
Dan,
he fucked up. Yep. It's pretty good.
Just gave away all his leverage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Once again, proving that, like, that's the problem when you get guest stars on a, I don't want to say run-of-the-mill sitcom, but, you know, I mean, this is kind of a template for
sitcoms. On an exceptional sitcom, thank you.
So,
well, yeah, I mean,
question.
But, like...
Sorry, go ahead.
The type of humor that character actors like Dan Castellaneta or Fred Willard bring to a show like this is just so out of the, like, standard template that a,
yeah,
you know,
day-after-day
show...
Yeah, they bring their own style to the show, yeah.
Right. That yeah. It's just, it's almost jarring in a way because it, like, it feels so fresh.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely something they probably wouldn't have done if they weren't doing this ratings thing. So,
yeah.
Like,
right,
it's
right.
Something that's cool. I mean, we get something kind of unique because of a ratings gimmick. So, I guess it's okay in that sense. I have a question. We cut back to the library room, and now Ross is there.
Yeah.
How did that happen?
He just flew back from L.A. in the same day.
Well, you see... I hate to say it, but...
Well, no, it's got
to
be a few days later because it's time for Phoebe's concert again.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought it was the same
right.
concert.
No. This has got to be like the following week or something.
Like,
he had time
or
to grab
just to
a
play,
poster
just to
of
play
the
devil's
beer company.
Just to play robot devil's advocate here. what if this is the end of the last concert still and like L.A. and New York are right next to each other in the coffee grid?
Oh, God, stop it.
Son
with
of
the
a
coffee
bitch.
Grid theory.
I mean,
get enough
I'm
of that
saying,
shit from Mike.
But they show a plane, don't they?
No.
Yeah. Not on the return, but when he went there.
Yeah, that's true. All right.
That
well,
the
we'll
plane
to...
the plane represented him entering into the coffee grid.
We'll have to ask.
No, it didn't. That doesn't even fit with what Mike always talks about. He says when they go into the coffee shop, they enter into a different plane where they...
Well, he was on a plane. We know that for sure.
Look, let's be honest. None of us understand. Let's be honest. None of us understand the coffee grid.
We'll just have to ask his...
Because
we'll
the coffee grid is
Mike.
Made up bullshit that Mike pulls out whenever
I'm sorry,
something
Mike,
that's not consistent
I hope,
on this fucking show.
I'm sorry, Mike. I tried. I just don't get it. I hope this was sufficient enough to get the kickbacks for referencing it.
So, okay, you're right. She's actually wearing something different. They're all in different
clothes.
Yeah,
she's wearing a different outfit because
she's
wearing the
it's
exact same thing Erica was wearing
there
in her
There are
first
professionals
scene.
On that's... this show's staff that pay attention to this stuff and make sure it's all consistent, goddammit.
Well, that's one thing I like about this show is they don't do the... And maybe this is more just, like, kids' shows, but, like, mm-hmm. I seem to have the room... I just seem to remember a lot of shows where you basically have a really limited wardrobe. Everyone wears the same kind of clothes all the time. And like,
no,
on
there's
this
only
show,
one color in that show, white.
Quite a bit.
Yeah.
I will I will say real quick.
Colored clothing. What?
90s clothing check. Phoebe's new boyfriend is wearing a red corduroy jacket.
Yep.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, boy.
It's awful.
Yeah. I mean, that's true. But I want Joel's talking about like kids shows with like coordinated, like colored clothing.
Yeah. Like,
well, I just
tight.
I mean, I'm just saying, like a lot of shows, they don't spend a lot of time or a lot of money on separate wardrobes, so they're just wearing the same things every day.
Yeah, you know, like cartoons, but for real life.
Yeah, like live action cartoons, basically. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Are you okay, Luke? Uh-huh.
I don't know. I
feel like you've been off all episode.
I don't know.
Do we need to take another break? Do you need to get like an Advil or something?
You know what? Yeah, let's take another break. I need to, I need to clear my head.
All right, we'll be right back.
Well, that's my line. We'll be right back.
We'll be right back.
Damn it, Zach!
Here's a room where I can go.
Sorry about that. We're back. So yeah, Ross is back in New York, and this kid's like playroom cannot stop getting more inappropriate, because now he's got a beer poster with like a sexy lady in a swimsuit that he's just showing everybody.
Yeah.
I'm still just shocked that they allowed her to come back after her parents were upset about the last time.
Yeah,
I am too. I mean, it's a little silly.
Well, it's because this guy doesn't appear to have any supervisor. Like he's apparently able to just put her on, and they haven't yelled at him enough to.
Well, and to her credit, she at least tries. For two lines, she actually tries.
The cow in the meadow goes moo, and then the farmer hits him on the head and grinds him up, and that's how.
So we moved ahead a little bit just to keep everything together. Ross explains that he found out that the mascot monkey for the beer we saw at the beginning is actually Marcel.
Yeah,
and he's going to be contacting the beer company to see if he can figure out where Marcel is so he can see him.
Which is an insane thing, by the way. I'm pretty sure there's no one, like, whatever hotline he can call to the beer company, no one is going to know that thing.
Well, yeah, and even if they...
Especially because they apparently bought Marcel from, a black market dealer that stole him from a zoo.
Yeah. Not to mention, even if they did know, some random guy calls up and says, hey, that monkey in your commercial, he used to be my monkey. Where is he now? Why would they answer that?
Yeah. Like, the best thing that can come out of this is he gets transferred to, PR or something, and they're sending him a coupon for beer, and that's it.
Yeah. Unless he has, a deed.
Actually, you know what? That
monkey.
Sounds totally worth it. I'm going to call up some beer companies later.
Call Budweiser and say, yeah, you stole my monkey! Yeah.
No, man, dude, but I would totally call a decent beer company if I was going
to. Phoebe screws the pooch again, and she starts talking about animals getting ground into meat.
Yeah,
I wouldn't be surprised if she did sing a song about screwing a pooch. That seems like it would be in character for her.
Yeah.
So they guys cut are to... totally skipping over a scene where the guys are watching the soap opera.
No, that's next.
That's next.
Because everything's fucking weirdly out of order, in this episode.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
They cut to everyone.
Oh yeah, you're right.
Wait, is Phoebe there in this scene?
Is she?
I don't.
Yeah, because they were all there listening to her song, and then they're in the apartment watching. Yeah,
well,
I assume
her and that guy are fucking right now, and they all went to Joey and Chandler's apartment because they didn't want.
Yeah.
Obviously, they weren't going to be there.
Yeah, that could be.
It's just a weird. It's hard.
It's
to
a weird transition.
Yeah.
Yeah,
the girls are there too. Okay. Well, yeah.
No,
everyone
but Phoebe's
just
not.
Went there.
But Phoebe's not there.
Like, yeah, between two songs, let's just go back and catch that show I'm on.
Yeah.
Fine.
So yeah, they're all watching Days of Our Lives. Mm-hmm. And notably, they're all drinking water. They're keeping healthy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
Zach, did the scene just make you angry?
That's a setup for a joke.
Yeah, I actually thought it was a little weird they weren't drinking coffee or soda or anything.
To be clear, they're drinking water out of coffee cups. And they're always drinking coffee, so you'd assume it's coffee.
Yeah.
And... I'll get to it.
It's going to be a coffee grit theory thing, isn't it?
No, it's not actually.
It's just a criticism of the joke, that's all.
Okay.
We'll get there.
Yeah.
Erica
shows up at the door.
Yeah.
Rachel gets mad at Joey for turning off the television. And she's like,
he doesn't want to confuse her by showing two Joeys in the same time.
Right, but Rachel's upset because Rachel doesn't care about anyone else, and she wants to know what happens. And so then Joey just explains, "Yeah, I got Leslie out of the coma, and then we make out." And she's like, "But how can that be? You were just kissing Sabrina." And Monica reminds her, "This is a television show where Joey is a neurosurgeon.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing else needs to make sense because that's already insane."
Now I have a question.
Oh, see, I thought the joke was that because he's a neurosurgeon, he's very desirable, and all the women will make out with him.
No, I think the joke is about suspension of disbelief.
Yeah.
I see.
So my question is, if she was 100% convinced that he was in Salem, then why did she go to his apartment?
Yeah, because she points that out. How did you get here so fast?
Yeah, she's like, why are you here? And it's like, wait, why did you come here if you didn't think I was here? Yeah.
Because she's a stalker. She probably came there to, rub her body on his pillow and, leave hairs in weird places and whatever else TV sitcoms
Well, no, she's mad at him because she saw him... Hmm. Well, no, she saw him making out with another woman on the TV show, so she probably came there to, like, torch his apartment.
Yeah. Oh, that makes sense. Okay,
yeah,
sure.
Because she actually looks pissed when he opens the door before, like, she even says anything.
Yeah, so he says, like, oh, they choppered me in, and she doesn't, I mean, she doesn't respond to that, but she's like, well, you were making out with some lady, and I demand an explanation, blah, blah. And he turns on the TV and says, I'm not Drake, I'm an actor.
Well, no, you're skipping. Oh, you're skipping.
Sorry.
No, what happens is he tries to explain himself and she's not listening to it, and she grabs a glass of water off the coffee table and splashes it on.
Right, yes. Mm-hmm. That does happen.
And then he's just
the old comedy standby, just throw water in somebody's face. Always hilarious.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he's just dunzo at this point. He's fed up. And he just says, alright, you know what? I'm not even a doctor, I'm an actor. You're dumb. And she's like, well, does the hospital know that you're an actor?
Yeah. And she turns the TV on, and she's like, but how can you be there and here? And he explains again. And then Ross...
And that is when the gang decides to fully gaslight her.
Yeah, that's when they decide to make fun of and trick this, like, helpless
this mentally
lady.
Ill person.
Well, because when she sees the TV and says, well, how can you be in two places at once, if you look... Monica and Rachel are, like, tittering in the background.
Yes.
Yeah. Like, just openly mocking this woman with mental health problems.
I still say this
problems.
Doesn't... This isn't gaslighting, though, because she's, like... She's in a state of mind where she refuses to believe the truth.
Encouraging someone to stay in their delusion still fits the definition of gaslighting, in my opinion.
I would say so.
But the
also,
thing is, they literally,
point,
there's literally no
less...
other option, because what would probably happen if they keep challenging her reality is she would get violent and hurt them. So they aren't trying...
Well, actually, see, so at this point, I'm less convinced that she does have a problem distinguishing fantasy from reality. I think she doesn't understand the concept of recorded video, which is just a problem of ignorance.
She thinks everything on TV is live and real.
Yeah. Okay, so
yeah,
she's
like,
just...
I think that if you showed her, like, a camcorder, mm-hmm. I think you could actually make her understand.
So they're not saying she has a disease, she's just incredibly
so Joey,
stupid.
So Joey wasn't taking advantage of a mentally challenged person. He was, well, he kind of still was, but in a different
yeah,
way.
Yeah, he still was.
He's
yeah.
taking
yeah.
advantage of somebody who has the intelligence level of, like, a four-year-old.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, first of all, that's got nothing to do with intelligence. That's just what you know. Like, she was clearly raised in a home that never had any TV.
But she's in her, like, let's be generous, mid-20s, and...
Wow, that was
going
pretty,
on
that
there.
Was
like,
pretty,
there's
that was
no way,
chatty, dude. This, wow,
I'm sorry. There's no way you reach that age without like getting a handle on the concept of TV and recorded
I don't know,
fiction.
I can believe it.
Unless
was,
you have
New
some
York
kind
City,
of
though.
Major,
yeah,
mental
I don't think
issue.
You could function in New York City among other people in New York City for an extended period of time without piecing some of this together through just logical deduction.
There you go.
But
I think it would be possible.
Well,
if she had a bad education and a bad home life, I think it would be possible.
Well, whatever the case is, she has some kind of problem, whether it's a learning disability or you know, just a weird childhood or whatever, and they still take advantage of her. And like
100%. That part, no excuse.
Maybe there wasn't another way to get out of it, but they're also really excited about it and think it's hilarious.
Oh, yeah, no. Yeah. Let's be clear. What they're doing is shitty. I just object to calling it gaslighting necessarily.
Fair enough. So yeah.
Anyway,
Ross
does, so what happens is Ross jumps up and says that this is not Dr. Remore. This is his evil twin brother,
Hans Remore.
So this
Hans. That's what it was.
This is just a cheap occasion to make fun of soap opera tropes, basically.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which
I'm pretty sure they actually go with the evil twin thing in the show within a show that he's on at some point.
They actually do. I looked it up. Eventually he comes back. There is an evil twin on the show called Stryker Remore.
Yeah. Well, you can't possibly
that's a good
make
name.
A pastiche of
that's
a soap opera.
Really,
right?
That's a really good name. I love that.
Yeah. So,
also, I mean, Phoebe has an evil twin. So, I mean, it's they go to this
well.
Oh,
yeah, she does, doesn't she? I forgot about that.
So they, so he says, fuck, now I'm lost. Damn it.
So, I don't know, Ross says something, gets mad and throws water in Joey's face.
Yep.
And then Rachel sees an opportunity here and says that something about him cheating on her, I think, and then throws water in his face.
He pretended to be Drake to sleep with me, and then she throws water at him. And that's how I know that he's really not Drake. And then Monica stands up and says,
Monica, who I want to point out, is holding a coffee cup, an opaque coffee cup that you can't see what's in it. I thought she was drinking coffee, and the like punchline to this joke was going to be everyone else was throwing water. Monica got all worked up and wanted to be in it, threw hot coffee at him, and burned him because she got too wrapped up in it and didn't realize. That would have been hilarious.
Yeah, that's what they were going to.
But no, it's still water. She says, yeah, like, you told me you would run away with me. And then Chandler stands up and says, and you left the toilet seat up, you bastard. And he hooks water in his face. And that was actually...
And he's grinning from ear to ear
that part,
as he does
that
it.
Part
he's
made
just
me
excited
laugh.
That wasn't where I thought they were going with it, but it was still a decent capper. Especially because I don't understand why Chandler would care if he left the toilet seat up.
Right.
Like, Chandler probably leaves the toilet
seat up, too.
They can't
seem to decide if they're having more fun, like, breaking this poor woman's world in half or just, like, abusing Joey.
Well, that's the thing. Yeah. That's the thing. I don't even think they're, like, doing it to mess with this lady. They don't even consider her as a person. They just want to fuck with Joey, regardless of the consequences.
Yeah, she's a guest
star.
Yeah,
Ross is the only one who, like, contributed to this Erica situation at all. Mm-hmm. The others just jumped in to throw water at Joey.
Yeah.
Which is pretty funny. I mean, I'm okay with it. But yeah, so then the resolution of this makes no sense, which is she kisses him anyway. He says you have to go find the real Drake.
He really like digs into his soap opera roots here and gives a nice dramatic speech about how you shouldn't be with me. You should be with the real Drake. Go find him.
Yeah, and then she kisses him. Which works, I guess. I don't know.
Well, I think it's
a cheesy soap opera resolution,
well,
right?
Yeah, so, I mean, her body language does kind of make it seem like she's going to say, no, no, it's you I love, but what it actually is just a dramatic goodbye, because she watches a lot of soap operas.
And he slams the door in her face, and she disappears from the universe forever at this point. Yeah.
Well, the funny thing is, like, Joey gets super into this kiss, and, like, they have to remind him, one, what his fake name is, and two, hey, you're trying to get rid of her, remember?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, real quick aside, I know we've addressed this before, but I can't remember what the reasoning we came up for it was. Why does their foosball table have plastic on top of it?
I assume it doubles.
So that you can put stuff on top of it, I guess?
Yeah, I assume it doubles as their dining table. I'm pretty
sure
that...
You know what? It's a funny thing. Just this Sunday, I was at a bar, and the table I was at was a repurposed foosball table with a... Well,
I'm pretty sure there's episodes. I don't remember if it's ones we've seen already or not, but I'm pretty sure those episodes we see them eating off it.
Okay. Right, because you watch so much Friends that you have a hard time keeping apart what you just watch.
I've seen this show a lot, guys. Like, I wouldn't be doing this podcast if I wasn't a huge Friends fan.
Okay, fair enough. I just couldn't remember why. There we go. So that's it. She's gone forever, like Simon said.
Yep.
She is gone from the universe.
She's gone. She's actually, I saw this on Wikipedia. I meant to bring it up during Friends Facts. Apparently they liked her performance in this so much that NBC gave her her own sitcom.
And
what, the character or just Brooke Shields?
Not the character, Brooke Shields.
Okay.
And I'm sure it did great considering I don't remember her sitcom.
What sitcom was that?
What was it? It's like Suddenly Susan, I think it's called. Suddenly Susan.
I actually have heard of that.
Yeah.
I don't remember anything about it, but the title.
No, it ran for 4 years.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, there you go.
Yeah.
I do want to say something. We've talked about all the stunt casting on this episode, and there's a ton, like, basically everyone who was famous in the 90s is on this show at one point or another.
Yeah.
Which makes me like,
and Chris Isaac.
Yeah.
Which right, but I don't know if any of you guys have ever really thought about that, but sometimes I think about that when I'm watching a show and I see a famous person, I'm like, so in the fiction of this universe, like, Brad Pitt doesn't exist as an actor. Nobody we know of as a famous actor exists as an actor.
Maybe that's why Erica is so confused about everything. They have all these guest stars that are people.
I don't think that follows. I don't think that just because there's someone who looks like a famous actor.
I think you can go either way. It could also be possible that Brad Pitt does exist and some people go, man, you look a lot like Brad Pitt.
Yeah, like, I don't think that's a one-to-one thing that necessarily follows.
But if you follow that thought line through, like, this means that one of two things. Either this is a world where none of the celebrities we know of exist as those celebrities, or this is a world where that is just chock full of celebrity lookalikes as just ordinary people who are never treated like they look like a celebrity. Like, they don't, like, they're treated like they're normal, ordinary looking people. And,
well,
like,
yeah, here's the
problem. Super attractive people are treated like they're not very good looking because of, you know, TV standards.
Yeah. Here's the problem. If you try to play off that, you get Ocean's 12, which it made me probably the maddest I've ever been
in a movie. The bit where Julia Roberts' character is pretending to be Julia Roberts.
She gets them somewhere they're not supposed to be because she's like, I look like Julia Roberts. And they're like, oh my gosh, you look so much like Julia Roberts.
I love
and then
that
I
joke.
Go, fuck this fucking stupid bullshit.
I love that joke on paper. Like, that's a metatextual reference that just scratches all sorts of itches for me. But the way it's actually played out on that show is so self-satisfied and its own ass.
Well,
that it's not
let me ask
fun.
You this. I think everyone loves Ocean's 11, but Zach, do you not consider Ocean's 12 canon because of that?
I've actually never seen Ocean's 11. I've only seen Ocean's 12.
Ocean's 11's really good.
Because I went with some
really
friends.
Weird.
Yeah.
I went with some friends. They took me, and I was like, do I need to see the first one? And they were like, eh. And
they, well, they weren't wrong.
They were right because Ocean's 12 is fucking terrible. And
I saw Ocean's 12, and I was like, wow, this is garbage. So I just never saw Ocean's 11. I'm sure
which is a shame, because Ocean's 11 really is a pretty good heist movie.
Totally
it's a pretty good movie, and it's definitely canon in that universe.
Okay, fair enough.
What is that?
So, which of those movies is the most canon?
Well, Ocean's 13, probably.
Wait.
Yeah.
Why would... Right? I mean, they're all just self-contained to that. Why would that be... Why am I talking about movies being canon?
Are you okay, buddy?
It's fine.
We're almost at the end, so let's just get through.
Let's get this episode done.
So, yeah, she...
get this episode done. You talk like this is a chore, man.
I'm having an off day. I don't know.
It's okay.
It's weird.
So Phoebe is gets fired.
And she's outraged.
And she's upset. And her boyfriend says... well, why don't you just play some
boyfriend,
normal
boyfriend's
songs?
Boyfriend's a little harsh. The guy she's been macking on.
She kissed
on.
Twice.
Yeah.
Why don't you just play normal kid songs? And she says, what, like some stupid big purple dinosaur? And he says, you don't have to be Barney. And she says, what's Barney?
Yeah. And now I'm wondering what she was alluding to.
I think that, I mean, she's wearing purple. Is she
is that what it's about? It's
yeah,
more like
I think
Burgundy,
she's. I think
but,
she was just
yeah.
making something up on the spot, and it just happened to correspond to something that she'd never seen.
Okay. It's just
jokes
weird.
Are really funny when you try to explain them.
It's a weird joke. I didn't. It's a weird one. Anyway,
it's actually a pretty, it's again, pretty standard or like pretty stock joke.
Sure.
It's just the delivery of it didn't really work for me.
So we go to the rest of the crew, and he is, I guess, Marcel is filming a movie in town. So they're going to go
Outbreak,
try to see
Outbreak
him.
2, The Virus Takes Manhattan, which I think is a play on about 20 sequels that were big at the time. Hey, talk about time going full circle. Everything getting a sequel was... topical joke in the mid-90s.
Yeah, that's true.
I thought it was like both a reference obviously to Outbreak and to Muppets Take Manhattan, right?
I think that's where my mind went. I got a bit of a Jurassic Park vibe too. I don't know why. Probably because Lost World came out around this time. Probably just conflating stuff in my mind.
So, at that point, the kid from the little brother from Smart Guy or the little kid
well,
from
before
Smart Guy,
before that Joey gets jealous of the monkey
and he's like, is this where the lady who what does he say
is this where the singing lady is who tells the truth
yes
which is the worst
I hate that line
possible.
So much
yeah just the worst possible
the holder of the truth the revealer of secrets
that would have been better than the actual dialogue they gave this kid
like I believe that the kids liked her but this is way overselling it like
it's like it's all of a sudden this cult springs around her
it's not written like a
there's
kid
there's like that kid
talk.
That misbehaved on an early episode and like they immediately know like oh it's because I'm not in I don't get enough attention at home. Like that's why she like messed up the water in the men's locker room and the That didn't happen in an episode of Friends.
What are you talking about, dude?
Yeah, no, I was just really going to
say... There's some show where that... Nah, I don't know.
I was just going to say the dialogue sounds like... It doesn't sound like how a kid would talk. It sounds like how a 30-year-old who has no kids and writes for a comedy show thinks kids would talk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's really annoying because, like, I don't have... I'm almost 30. I don't have kids, but I know that's not how kids talk.
Yeah.
Right.
So he runs out to yell to all the children that this is where the lady is.
And then I'm all super jealous because he does the two fingers in the mouth whistle thing that I've never been able to figure out how to do. Screw you.
Well, that kid didn't do it either. He just put his fingers in his mouth and they dubbed
right,
it
no,
over.
But screw you, fictional kid who I'm supposed to believe is able to do that.
Sure.
So Phoebe launches into a song about alternative sexuality, which is nice.
She
presented a jab about bisexuals for some reason, but
it starts out nice and inclusive by saying some guys like women, some guys like men, and both of that's okay. And then some are bisexuals, but some would say they're just kidding themselves, contributing to bi erasure, which is
that's fucked up.
Actually, it's a legitimate problem.
Yep.
That was weirdly mean-spirited in the context of the rest of this.
Yeah, it's weirdly mean-spirited after just being kind of cool.
Well, it's just this, like all 90s things that try to be inclusive, it always trips over itself and falls on its face.
Yeah. And then it cuts to a kid sitting next to Chandler.
Creepy kid who's giving Chandler the side eye, and Chandler's just staring back at him.
They immediately ruin any goodwill they may have gotten from that first bit by
Oh my god, they're implying that kid is gay.
Not only is it a gay panic joke, but it's a kid-adult relationship panic joke.
I didn't even catch that.
I don't know about that. I mean, it's the kid has a crush on a handsome man. I don't know. That doesn't seem the worst.
It's a stupid throwaway joke.
Okay, you said handsome man, but I'm pretty sure it was Chandler, so I'm confused.
I think if you look it up, Matthew Perry is generally considered a handsome man.
Come on, all of the friends are like 8.5s at least, so there you go.
Okay.
Maybe not David Schwimmer.
Right, sure.
I'd say if David Schwimmer never talked on the show, I'd rate him pretty highly in attractiveness, but the character they give him, the portrayal he gives it, is just really unattractive.
Yeah. Anyway.
So, okay, we cut to the set of the movie.
They're at the set of the movie.
Yep.
And, they walk up to the barrier and they're hoping to see the monkey. Ross mentions how he hasn't seen the monkey in forever, and Chandler makes a joke about, you haven't looked down in the shower lately?
And then they realize just how terrible that joke is and call attention to it by him getting mad at everyone for not laughing at it.
Yeah.
Yeah, always good to point out that your jokes don't work. That's always the
best
thing.
Well, I mean, it's midnight. It's your third straight day of... 24 hours in the writer's room trying to finish this episode. You can't think of a good joke. You're like, fuck it. We'll just use the bad joke and mention that it's a bad joke.
Yeah. Hang in that shade.
So then, a security guard walks up to try and push everybody away. And Ross tries to ask him, hey, where's the monkey? And he's like, dude, I just fucking work here. Leave me alone.
Yeah. I gotta say, I'm not sure if... how I would react to someone being like, I'm that monkey's best friend.
Yeah.
Well, I probably react similar to this guy where he says, and I've got a timeshare in the Poconos with Flipper.
So he pushes them
back.
But
then the monkey comes out and Ross calls out to it, but it ignores him.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on in the set, and there's probably a lot of other noise around. I wouldn't pay attention to some random people yelling if I was a monkey either.
Yeah.
Right. So then he gets an idea, though. He has a spark of inspiration.
Yeah.
He starts singing In the Jungle.
Yep.
And soon enough, all the friends are joining in, giving him the wingo-wep in the background.
Yep.
And then Joey cuts in with the ooh, and Marcel hears him, and he comes running.
It's kind of a great joke, because Joey's super, everyone else is just kind of singing along to help Ross, and Joey gets really into it.
His
is, really on pitch, and, he's projecting, he's getting super into it to the point where everyone else is kind of dying out, and he's still singing, and kind of give him the side
eye.
It's
And that's basically the end of the episode.
We don't,
There's
Maybe part two resolves how he apparently just walks away with the property of this movie studio or something. I don't know.
I've watched ahead. He just says, like, they just cut to them still at the movie set and they go to watch another scene.
Oh, okay.
I mean, and to be fair, like, if I were them, I'd end on this too, because that's a really heartwarming moment of, hey, Marcel's back.
Yep. Yay!
Like, give everyone a nice, warm, happy feeling to go to commercial with.
Yeah, I'm actually surprised because that feels like a full episode, and then apparently they kept going when they
aired. Yeah, it's more like I said, the next episode takes place at the same movie set, but that's the only point of continuity.
Well,
and then from that set, like, they meet other characters that kicks off all the plots of part two.
Well, the weirdest thing, and I'm wondering if they maybe just added this knowing, like, it was going to go into syndication, but, like, after this we get, like, the over-the-credits scene where Phoebe and whatever dude are playing, together. Phoebe's doing Smelly Cat, which this guy clearly doesn't really know. Like, I'm sure he's heard her sing it if he's been listening to her sing, but, like, he's kind of just following along, and he starts harmonizing at the end, and she gives him a hard time for,
Well, he goes very, like, high.
Yeah,
he
goes falsetto,
Yep. And, like, she's like, don't you want to pick a more manly note, which is kind of bullshit.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's shitty.
And is this the last time we ever see him?
I'm pretty sure.
We're to assume she dumped him because of that.
He's a guest star. Yeah. They're not paying him to be in two episodes.
Yeah, there you go. So that, I guess that's the reason why we never see him again. He decided to sing high, and she was like, nope.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's a very Seinfeldian reason to get rid of a date.
Yep. He failed the Phoebe test.
Yep.
Yeah. But that's the episode.
Oh, and I want to point out, I'm looking at all the, like, guest star credits as we're going through whatever. Yeah. And I want to point out that not only did Dan Castellaneta's character never get named in episode, his full credit is The Zookeeper.
The Zookeeper.
Nice.
Like, that's apparently just his name.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fred Willard, on the other hand, gets an actual name. He's Mr. Lipson.
Yeah, they gave him a
which,
name.
I guess that was needed for the gag where Ross mentions him or whatever, and the zookeepers. What? Wait, Lipson knows about this?
Yeah.
Right. Well, that's the episode. It sounds like we're all kind of a little down on this one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It wasn't great.
Well, it's weird because the special guest stars were the best parts of the episode, but I feel like having them all actually did a disservice to the episode as a whole, because all the rest of the parts, I feel, really suffered because of them.
Yeah. And normally you have the characters play off each other, and this time I felt like most of it, they were just, like, the straight man for the guest characters.
They were playing off characters whose, like, bits didn't really fit in with the way the show normally works.
Yeah.
Right, like, it was, the whole plot is, like, Joey, Ross, and Phoebe go hang out with a guest star, and Rachel and Monica can just kind of sit in the background.
Right.
And then it's going to get flipped in the next one, where Rachel and Monica have a thing with Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Yeah, Rachel and Monica do basically nothing in this episode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's not the best one. There's some solid jokes, but it's not the best Friends episode.
Yeah, I feel like the two-parter promise is, like, betrayed. This just a box standard episode. Like, why this? There's no reason for it to be a two-parter other than they wanted to make one, and it's,
well,
you know.
I think it's a two-parter just entirely because they aired them back-to-back after the Super Bowl, and they wanted to call them both the one after the Super Bowl.
Yeah. Well, like I said, there is continuity between them. It's really loose, but it's more than this show normally has, right?
Sure.
But still, they should have taken this opportunity to make a real double-length episode, you know?
Yeah, it's no Ross saying the wrong person's name at the altar. Spoilers for anyone who has been just watching along with us.
Yeah, gosh, yeah, get...
I didn't say whose name he says, or who was at the altar with.
Could have been Joey.
God, that would have been so much better.
Oh, that'd be good, yeah. But, well, we don't have that many listener questions this week, so I'm going to forego taking one last break here. We do have a couple listener questions to get through here, though. You can send listener questions to us at bestfriendsforever, with the number 4, at gmail.com, or just... adding us on Twitter at 20-somethings. So our first question here comes from FriendsFan77, who says, if you could take the place of any friend on the show, which one would it be and why?
Chandler, because even though we don't know what he does, he is apparently a successful businessman of some kind.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
He wears nice ties.
Also, you get to be sarcastic all the time. That's kind of fun,
that's
right?
True.
He
yeah,
gets to
yeah.
throw water in Joey's face.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, because the yeah. other options, yeah. I would probably stick with Chandler.
I'd be willing to replace Monica because she inherited like an absurd apartment. Do you know how much that apartment is worth
yeah.
in New York City?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
In fairness, that's
and her parents are super rich.
That's a general sitcom problem. I think yeah. even like the, I think I remember the worst one on modern TV is probably How I Met Your Mother. Ted's mm-hmm. apartment is like fucking
that.
Enormous.
Oh yeah, so, that one that he gets later in the show.
Yeah,
somewhere around the time where it starts getting shitty. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Seinfeld actually makes jokes about like apartment prices, which is nice.
Yeah. No. Like. Well. I mean, I'll say what you will about Seinfeld, but a lot of that
yeah.
humor.
I mean, it's a bad show compared
right.
to Friends.
But
yeah.
a lot of the humor comes from a lot of the humor comes from Jerry Seinfeld and Larry David's actual like experiences in New York City. So there's a lot of like
right.
There's a lot of honesty behind it.
Yeah.
For better. Or
yeah,
worse.
And I mean, yeah. Again, credit where credit's due. Obviously, that honesty leads to a lot of. Really terrible things. That,
oh yeah, no, they're awful, awful garbage human beings. But
yeah,
and, yeah, I, yeah.
And Friends, as great as it is, doesn't really typically like it's set in New York City, but they don't really
well
do that
Friends,
much with it most of the time.
Friends,
like sometimes
Friends follows the general sitcom rule of like everything in the world is at the service of the jokes. Yeah, right. Characters are only their established traits as much as it informs a joke. Reality only yeah. needs to be what it needs to be in service of what's happening at this time. It's very
right.
valuable.
Yeah, yeah. Does anybody... Yeah, anyone have any other answers to that?
No, that's good.
I actually forgot the question.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
No, it was which friend would you be?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'd honestly, I'd be any of them. Their lives are all way better than ours could ever hope to be because they live in a sitcom and they're the main characters.
right.
Yeah.
All right, this question comes in from Mike off of our Facebook group. I don't think this is our Mike.
I could see him creating a fake Facebook account just
Jesus,
to send us a troll question.
To push
question.
His agenda through.
Well, read it, and we could probably figure out if it is or not.
Yeah. Well, he says, if the Friends were Power Rangers, what color would each of them be?
Well,
they'll be white, I guess.
Well, the problem is, weren't there only like two girl Power Rangers?
Yeah, and
so.
Also,
that sounds right.
Also, like we talked about, there's definitely not the same racial diversity, so that makes it tough.
Yeah.
Wait, you said
know.
There were
Who's
all the... You think the other, like, there were five of them, right? The other, you think, Simon, do you think the other three Power Rangers were all the white Rangers because they were all white people?
Okay.
Wait.
I'm going to say probably not.
The Red Power Ranger was like the leader, right?
Right. So who's the friend leader? Who's
well, Ross friend? Because he's the biggest. Ross because he's the biggest of them.
Okay. Yes.
I'm stealing the Futurama bit, but I.
Why
it's
does
good
he
bit.
Not simply eat the other friends?
Right.
Yeah, of course.
It's been a while since I've brought it up. I feel it's time to bring it back.
Okay. Sure.
Okay. Yeah, in a while, I mean like three episodes, but you know.
I guess Ross would be red.
Yeah.
I guess Rachel would be pink.
Yes.
Phoebe would be yellow.
One or the other. Mm-hmm. There's
well,
black
I
and
guess,
blue, right?
Yeah.
And then green. Yeah, there was a green one, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wait, wasn't he the leader?
Maybe? I don't remember.
Sure. I remember the green one being the coolest one, so that can't be Ross.
I don't know. This question's making my like stomach hurt. I'm moving on.
Okay.
So this one comes in. Oh, that's weird. The last one was from Mike. This one's from a Zach. This
what,
one says,
like
"Well, I don't know. I mean, it's a person named Zach.
There's only clearly
there
there's
are
only
many
one
Zachs.
Of those.
Yeah."
Let's see, this says, "Hey Luke, this is Zach. I don't know if you can hear this. The doctors say that after the head injuries you suffered from the accident, you're lucky to still be alive, but they don't know when you're going to wake up. We really miss you on Teenagers with Attitude. I wonder what you're dreaming about in there. Well, whatever it is, I hope it's not good enough to keep you away from us for too long. Get better soon, okay? I promise to visit as much as I can until you wake up.
What is this?
Well, that's...
So that's is somebody just like, punking you?
That's weird.
I feel like that's in really bad taste.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, listen...
Anyway, yeah... Yeah,
listeners, we appreciate your questions, but like, come on.
I know. Yeah, we've said you can ask us anything, but
time. Yeah, I don't get that one. Anyway, FriendsFan78 says, "What would happen if the Friends were visited by Doctor Who?" Now, this is the kind of question we can get into.
that's kind of funny because like, the Friends aired during that like dark period after the show ended and before it came
back. But before the reboot,
well, it was I think around the time that they tried to do that live act or that feature length movie that was like made by an American production company, I think, that flopped horribly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can just imagine all of, like, Chandler and Joey getting into all kinds of shenanigans with like the TARDIS.
Yeah. They'd be like, "What is this? It looks out of place." In New York.
Well, I mean, it can look like anything. So, like, they could go back to their apartment, think it's their apartment. Nope, it's actually the TARDIS. Wacky time shenanigans.
Man. Or maybe it's a coffee shop, and they can use it to go to other coffee shops in the time stream, and that's why it's the coffee shop theory, coffee bean theory. What do you call it? Coffee grid theory.
Damn it, Zach.
What?
Nothing. Okay. You know what you did.
I'm sorry. I...
But, yeah, I think that's going to do it for this episode of 20-somethings with First World Problems. I'm real tired.
Yeah, you seem like you're not doing great, buddy.
Can I plug something real quick?
Yeah, go right ahead.
Okay, I mean, I've said it before, but I'm going to keep mentioning it. Feel free to check me out on my other podcast that I do with my friends Jules and Tyler, who's been on the show a few times, where we basically do the same thing, but for the Pokemon cartoon. it's called the Pocket Monster Cast.
Oh, I see.
Gotta catch them all.
Check out my podcast. Yeah. It's called Let's Rank. And we just rank every movie ever made on a scale.
I see.
Yeah, it's fun. We're up to 50... ish movies by now, and the best movie of all time so far, surprisingly, is Fever Pitch 2.
Alright, Zach, did you have anything you wanted to plug before we left?
No, I mean, I just, I just wanted to tell you, Luke, I hope you get well soon, because we miss you, buddy.
What?